Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Dan Amud Aleph. Before we get started today, I wanted to discuss something that is not necessarily related to this daf in particular, but to the Masechet as a whole, and that is because on today's daf, we transition from having the Perush of Rashi on every daf to the Perush of the Rashbam. You can see here in the Gemara's, about a third of the way down on the right side, it says, Ad kan Perush Rashi Zatzal, Mikan Velech Perush Rabbeinu Shmuel B'Rabbi Meir. And on the side, there's a asterisk that also indicates, Bidfus Vizrael Benusach Kan Meit Rashi Zal. Here is where Rashi passed away, and the Perush of the Rashbam takes over. So first of all, in terms of Perush Rashi in the Gemara was redacted by Rashi himself numerous times. And therefore, Rashi's Perush throughout the Masechta, we find different versions of Rashi. Some claim that the Rashi al-Arif is an earlier Madura of what Rashi had wrote, but Rashi worked very heavily to edit and to redact his Perush till he got it right, which means that he fixed things, changed things, and got to his succinctness because of the fact that he went over it numerous times. And so when we say we don't have Perush Rashi Zal, so for instance, if you go to Arvei Pesachim, where once again there you have both the Perush of Rashbam and the Perush of Rashi, and over there are a lot of questions about the quality, as well as whether it is Rashi or not in Arvei Pesachim. So it could be that it's one of the earlier versions of Rashi's Perush, and therefore people use the Rashbam in Arvei Pesachim because Rashi's Perush over there is difficult and not as clear, succinct, and correct as it is in other places in Shas. Over here as well, in the Gemara Baba Batra, it's clear that a Perush Rashi existed beyond where we have it, because the Balei Tosafot, even in later in today's daf, quote Perush Rashi. They quote that they had a Rashi that they were looking at. Whether that was actually Rashi's Perush that they were looking at, or some other Perush that they thought was Rashi, but it did exist, and in all likelihood, it might have been an earlier version of Rashi's Perush on the Baba Batra, or the fact that Rashi's Perush on this section was somehow lost or destroyed over time, and that's why we don't have it. But because of that, we switch now from the Perush of Rashi to the Perush of the Rashbam. Now, it's important to understand the differences between them and their relationship. The Rashbam is actually Rashi's grandson. As you see over here, he's Rav Shmuel b'Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is Rashi's son-in-law, married to Rashi's daughter, and they have three children who are all Balei HaTosafot. They have Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Meir, who is the Rivam that is found in the Balei HaTosafot. They have the Rashbam, who's Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Meir, who's found again as one of the Balei HaTosafot, and also as a Perush here on the Gemara in Baba Batra, replacing his grandfather Rashi, as well as in Arvei Pesachim. And then you have the youngest child, who was significantly younger than his other brothers, and that was Rabbeinu Yaakov b'Rabbi Meir, who was otherwise known as the Rabbeinu Tam. That's because he couldn't be the Rivam, because his older brother was Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Meir, who was the Rivam. And therefore he took on the title of Rabbeinu Tam, because Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshev Olalim, and that's why he's known as Rabbeinu Tam, but he's significantly younger than his brothers. His older brother, the Rashbam, is one of his Rebbeim. He will later go on, the Rabbeinu Tam, to argue on his older brother in many areas or issues. One of those where he complains or bemoans his older brother's changing of Girsa'ot in order to accommodate the logic in the Gemara, and he felt that the Rashbam was too free in changing of Girsa'ot or redacting Girsa'ot in order to make the Gemara make sense or flow. He even says that a little bit about his grandfather, Rashi, and therefore the Rabbeinu Tam, many times you will see, is connected to what he considers to be older or more miyuchas girsa'ot. Instead of changing the girsa, he would use the older girsa and try to explain the Gemara in that way. Now, in terms of Rashi and the Rashbam writes about Rashi's Perush and Chumash twice, once in the beginning of Sefer Breshit, and again in Parshat Vayeshev. And in doing so, he explains what the point of his Perush and Chumash is, and that is that he wanted to write a Perush al Torah that was the Pshat, that was the basic, simple understanding of what is written in the Chumash. And he says there in Parshat Vayeshev that he actually spoke to his grandfather about that, and he claims that his grandfather said that if he had more time, and if he had the opportunity, that he would write another Perush al Derech HaPshat. And that's what the Rashbam claims in Chumash that he is doing. Rashi, in the beginning of Sefer Breshit, also has numerous comments where he says that I'm only coming to give the pshat, but I'm trying to give the pshat here. Rashi does do that, but Rashi uses a very specific vehicle in order to create the pshat in the Chumash, and that is that he uses the Midrashei Chazal to explain problems in the text, or to explain problems between different texts. Rashi and Chumash, in general, is a reconciler. So if we find stirot between different parshiot, Rashi will always find the Midrash Chazal that somehow is able to reconcile, put them together. For instance, in Breshit Aleph, Breshit Bet, where there are two stories of creation, Rashi brings the Mamrei Chazal that really make them into one big picture of creation and reconciles between them in that manner. The Rashbam says that given his grandfather's greatness and that he had gone or set out to do the Pshat, he still followed the words of our Chazal because those are the main way or the main part of what is considered to be the interpretation of Chumash and the interpretation of the Torah. But nevertheless, he wants to do something which is to interpret the Chumash basically on face value and the Pshat without the quote-unquote interference of the Midrashei Chazal, but simply what's written in the text. How would you solve the problem without the Midrashei Chazal? So the Rashbam, in contrasting his Perush with his grandfather's Perush, indicates that he is the Pashtan, and that his grandfather was following the Mamrei Chazal. What's interesting is that in Gemara, they almost have the opposite role, which is Rashi in Gemara is really the Pashtan. He is the one who explains any sugya, generally in the simplest and most straightforward form, and in many cases he ignores the sugya other places in Shas, even though it appears other places in Shas, or even though there are other pieces of information that might have influence on the sugya, Rashi generally will not address those issues, and only explain the Gemara in its local context, and not try to reconcile it with other places in Shas. Sometimes underlying Rashi's explanation is avoiding a problem or deals with the issue the way that he writes it, but he still does not, in most cases, address it head-on. And in instances, actually the same Gemara in two different Masechtot, he'll explain differently because one explanation fits better contextually in this Masechta, and the other explanation fits better in the other Masechta, and he doesn't necessarily see that as being problematic or a stira. And so Rashi, in that way, takes things really at face value, in a simple pshat, and we also know that he is the most succinct writer in terms of the Perush on the Gemara. The Rashbam, on the other hand, is one of the Balei HaTosafot, and their style, which built really on top of what Rashi's Perush, but then looked at reconciling Gemarot or disparate Gemarot from all over Shas, and saying, well, whatever is said here has to fit into the context of all of Shas. So if I have a Gemara that is against this, it contradicts this. So if I have a Gemara that is slightly different than this, I have to find out a way or figure a way to make it all fit. And therefore, I'm going to reconcile, or I'm going to create ukimtot, or different types of constructs, in order to have it be one big picture that can all meld together and fit together. Even sometimes where it's seemingly the Gemara is clearly having a machloket, and the two positions are contradictory, almost mutually exclusive. Many times you'll find the Balei HaTosafot reconciling them, trying to make them into one big picture. And definitely the Rashbam is a part and parcel of that. He was also like his grandfather Rashi. He had an influence on the Girsaot, and he was willing to change the Girsaot. Generally, Rashi, when he changed the Girsaot, he did have some evidence of the fact that there were alternate Girsaot, but he was willing to leave the more common or more accepted Girsaot when he felt they were improper. And the Rashbam is also very willing to do so, and you'll see that many times. And the Rabbeinu Tam, who disagreed with his brother on this issue, many times will explain it based on the Rabbeinu Hananel or the Geonim's version of the Girsah, because he didn't feel it was appropriate or proper to change the Girsah because of the lack of logic, but you had to come up with a way or a possibility of explaining it, even according to the old Girsah. So in some senses, in Gemara, Rashi and the Rashbam are reversed, whereas in Chumash, the Rashbam is the Pashtan, and Rashi is following Midrashei Chazal and the Reconciler. Over here in Gemara, the Rashbam is the reconciler, whereas Rashi is the more, we'll call it a quote, Pashtan, but the more succinct writer here on the Gemara. It's in some senses their roles are reversed. Now, the greatness or the grandeur of Rashi in terms of his Perush on the Gemara is that he did something unique that was not done by the Perushim, or those that commented before him. Those that came before him used one of two approaches. Either they wrote a Perush that would stand independent, meaning that you could read the Perush without having read the Gemara, and it would give you a succinct view of the Gemara, as well as their commentary on that which took place in the Gemara. Almost in a sense is a Kitzur that was a replacement for the Gemara, or they wrote a commentary on the Gemara in which they would take excerpts from the Gemara and then give you a large commentary or speak about that in a paragraph or in an explanation that tried to work with the sugya or the ideas that are brought up in the sugya. Rashi's innovation, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik indicated, is the fact that his Perush can be read hand in hand with the Gemara. Rashi's Perush was not built to be read independently. It also was not a Perush where you take a certain topic or a certain line in the Gemara and then you just read the Rashi. Rashi's Perush was to be read in line or hand in hand with that which you are reading in the Gemara. And so therefore Rashi's innovation is that he was almost an aid or an assistant to your learning of the Gemara. And therefore he integrated himself in many senses into the Gemara because he was giving you a Perush on the run as you're going through the Gemara. And that innovation is what makes Rashi so great, as well as his ability to, in a very succinct way, explain, give you enough information to understand the Gemara, as well as, in many cases, fend off questions of the Rishonim or other Rishonim, where they're dealing with other sugyot or other problems. Rashi's Perush, in many ways, incorporates or understands that, and is able, through his Perush, to deflect those problems. And so that is the greatness or the grandeur of Rashi. The truth is that in Chumash, his Perush works the same way, which his Perush is written in order to be read together along with the Psukim. Unlike other Perushim, even though the Ramban came after him, you look at a case of the Chidushei Ramban, the Ramban takes on little pieces and he has a large piece on each little explanation. It's not just a simple explanation that you would read hand in hand with reading the Psukim and the Chumash. And that is the greatness of Rashi, his succinctness, his clarity, his explanation, his ability to be read hand in hand with the Gemara. And so now you'll see evidence of the fact that the change from Rashi to Rashbam has huge impact, and has the fact that the Dapim until now in Bava Batra are much bigger, because the Perush on the Dap was Rashi. From here to forward, the Dapim in Bava Batra shrink significantly, because in essence you had the Balei Tosafot on both sides. You had the Rashbam on one side and the Balei Tosafot on the other side, but both write in a manner that is similar to the Balei Tosafot, both reconciling as well as explaining, and not extremely succinct. And so you'll see, even when you turn the Daf for the next couple of Dapim, you'll see that the Rashbam expands significantly in these areas, and the Gemara itself shrinks on a given Daf. Anyway, that's just a little bit of background, because we're switching from Rashi to the Rashbam today, about these two great commentators. It's a lot more to be said, but at least here we gave some understanding of what's going to happen here as we transition from Rashi to the Rashbam in Bava Batra. Now Gemara is continuing. We're five lines down on the top of Chof Den Amar Aleph, trying to discover what is the source for the Chachamim's position that you need 3 years for a Chazakah. They rejected Rabbi Yishmael's understanding, because Rabbi Yishmael's understanding is that it derived from Shor Muad. And in deriving from Shor Muad, as the Balei Tosafot point out over here, it's very clear that that's focused on a specific event or incident that takes place. And therefore, in terms of Chazakah, whether it's the goring of the Shor, or whether it's talking about a field, we're looking for a specific event, not a duration of time. And so therefore, Rabbi Shmuel believes that when you have harvests, or you eat from the harvest, each of those items will considered a single unit for the chazakah. And if you have three of them, you will establish a chazakah, irrespective of the time elapsed to establish that chazakah. And that's why the Gemara asks about Rabbi Meir Shita, that eliminates time completely. And it says that according to Rabbi Shmuel and Ochanami, in Rabbi Meir's position, that's what would happen. The Chachamim's position, on the other hand, focuses on time and says that 3 years is a chazakah no matter what. Well, where did they get that from? So we attempted to get that from the Psukim in Yirmiyahu, but in the end, the Gemara rejected that and said that was an Eitzah Tova Kamashbalan. That could be just good advice, and we can't prove any normative laws from those Psukim in Yirmiyahu. Elama Rava, so Rava here is going to give a number of suggestions. We're going to modify and refine it until we get to the final answer. But here is the beginning of Rava's position. Shata kamaita machilinish. On the first year, when someone goes into a person's field, they're mochel on that. Tarte, the second year, they're also mochel. Zlat, lo mochel. But when they get to the third year, they're not mochel on it. And that's why you need 3 years, because this is human nature. Human nature is to let things go the first year, to let things go the second year. But by the third year, people don't let it go. If they do let it go, that's an indication they must have sold the property, and whoever is utilizing the property, it must be their property. So Amalei Abaye challenges that, Elamiata, Ki Hadra Ara, Tahada the bar mipere. If you're right about that, then when we go to din about this issue and we figure out that the person who was living there was improperly living there and we give the property back to the original owner, there in the Gemara further on, we have a statement that Rav Nachman believes that hadra ara hadra pere, that when a land goes back, so do the peirot of the land, which means that if you lose the case and the land is not considered to be yours, then you give the land back to the original owner, but you also have to pay him for all the harvests that you ate in the interim. According to Rova's formulation, if you forgive in the first year, forgive in the second year, just don't forgive in the third year, it does mean in the first 2 years, you let it go. You were not upset, and you were not makpid that this person took it. You were mochel on that. You were mochel on his being there. If you are mochel on him being there, then he has a right to keep the fruits, and he shouldn't have to repay you for them. The fact that we demand that you repay them, Aloma Amar Rav Nachman, Hodra Arav, Hodra Peire, that Rav Nachman says that when the land goes back, so do the peirot, it's clear here that there isn't Michila. El Amar Rava, so Rava refines that formulation and says, Shata Kamaita lo kapid inish, Tarte lo kapid, Tlat kapid. He says, not that it's Michila, it's a question of people get upset about something. But the 3 years don't derive from the fact that a person's Mochel on the first year or the second year and not on the third year, but rather a question of whether a person takes interest or note of somebody doing something. Then when somebody uses the property in the first year, the person isn't so makpid. He doesn't care so much about it. He uses it a second year, he doesn't care so much. He uses it a third year, then he gets upset about it and he won't let it go. That people are, in general, laid back about these issues. Someone uses their field for a year or two, when they weren't using it, they're not going to worry about it, they're not going to make a stink about it. On the other hand, when they do it for 3 years, that's already considered to be a significant amount of time, and then they'll stand up and say something. The fact that the person did not stand up and say something is a good indication of the fact that it must be the property of the new owner, the person who is utilizing it. By doing so, or formulating in that manner, Rav avoids the problem of the peirot, because now there's no mechila here. It's about akpada, whether the person is makpid. And as the Rashbam says over here, he's not makpid on the fact that his friend goes in there without his permission, and in many senses, he doesn't even want to go to din. It's not a person who wants to end up in court right away, and doesn't have to deal with it in that manner. But the Rashbam says clearly, the peirot, he is not mochel on, and therefore, the peirot would have to be paid back. He allows you to use the land, he's not going to go to court about that, but he will demand the repayment of that which you took from him. So that's the way that Rova wants to formulate it now. So Amar Abaye, Abaye again challenges it and says, Me'ata, Hanad Debe Bar Yashiv, the Kapte, these Bar Yashiv who are very makpid, these are people who are not of generous spirit. Afil Aman de Cholif a Mitzra to do. Even if someone enters their land, they get upset about it. Hachanami de la Alta Avi Chazoko. Then if somebody ends up on their property, even immediately it should become a Chazoko. Meaning that if you say that the whole issue stems from Hakbada, then there's really a very subjective side to this hakbada, which is it depends on the nature of the individual. And that means that if a person is laid back, then maybe it takes longer to establish a chazaka with that individual because they won't get all worked up about it. But if you have a family like this where they get worked up if you step onto their property, then if someone's working their property and they don't say anything, immediately that should be a chazaka because that's a clear indication that that person must own the property, otherwise they wouldn't let it go. V'chitei ma'ochanami. And if you want to say, yes, there is a subjective nature to this, then you make your whole law subjective. And that is, in general, we do not like having dinim, especially dinim derabanan, that are subjective. We like to objectify the halacha, so therefore there's no gray areas, or areas where people can justify or talk themselves into doing something and saying it's okay. We'd rather have it be black and white. That's part of what the rabbanan do in putting a shmira around the Torah, is to make the lines much clearer, or to make it black and white, rather than to have these shades of gray. And similarly over here, we don't like having halachot that are subjective, we like having an objective standard that can establish us how you create a chazaka. Now, as the Rashba notes over here, it can't be that the Barbele Yoshiv, who are these unusual individuals who are so makpid, that they should color or change the halacha for everyone else. We have a general principle in halacha, which is Betela Dato Etzel Kol Adam, that there is a general or default way that people act. If people are on the fringes, we don't consider that fringe type of behavior when we are establishing halachot, takanot. And so over here, we should just ignore these individuals who are on the fringes of society that get crazy even when people walk into their property. So why is it that Abaye is challenging Rava from these individuals? So what the Rashba says, and the Ritva says something similar, is that the question of Abaye is not particular about the debate Bar Yashiv, but rather the question stems from a more general approach to this issue, which is that Hakpada is a very personal thing. It's very hard to establish a default level or a default number of years for Hakpada when it's so personal and so subjective. And they just bring the Beit Bar Yoshiv as an example, an extreme example of the fact that you could be at different ends of this spectrum. You think 3 years. Here it could be momentarily you could establish a chazaka with these individuals. Since Hakpada is so personal, it's very hard to argue that that is the source or the reason behind the chazaka taking 3 years. El Omer Rava. So here it comes to the final refined answer of Rava, which is what we accept halacha is. Shata kamaita mizdari nish pishtare. The first year, a person is careful with the shtar. Tarte, vitzlat, mizdair. 2 years, 3 years, a person makes sure to have his shtar. Tvei, lo mizdair. Beyond that, he's not careful with the shtar. Meaning that a person has a bill of sale. He has a document that evidences his purchase. He hangs on to it in case there are any questions that arise about his purchase. So he safeguards it and he keeps it around to make sure that he can bring evidence to the fact that he purchased it. After a certain amount of time, he believes that no one is going to question his ownership anymore because it's just been so long. He's been there enough time by which anybody who had questions about his ownership should have brought them up already. And have they have not brought them up, we don't expect them to come in the future. Given that, he's no longer careful about keeping the document anymore because he thinks it's a done deal. And nobody's going to question his ownership over here. And that's exactly what Rava says. That's what the 3-year period is. The 3-year period is a window of time in which we say that the shtar or the document of purchase is the primary form of evidence of your ownership of the land. After 3 years, we allow you the possibility of establishing your ownership not only through the shtar, but even through the fact that you have been resident there or utilized it for the past 3 years. And that is to avoid the problem of someone losing a shtar after a certain point in time and then not be able to establish their ownership of the land. So this is a alternate mechanism for establishing your ownership on the land. And that is by saying that I've been here long enough and nobody has questioned it. That should be evidence of the fact that I had a purchase document and it was lost. And even though I don't have the purchase document in hand, this time period that's elapsed that I've lived here without any questions should be a good enough evidence of the fact that I own this property. And the truth is the other way around. If in the early part he says, I don't have a shtar mechira, I mean within the 3 years he says, I don't have the purchase document, that makes it much more suspect because people keep their shtarot around that time. And if he tells us he doesn't have it, that raises serious questions about his rights or his ownership over here because he can't produce a purchase document. And so the window of time in which we say that it's suspicious that he doesn't have a purchase document is the first 3 years. After 3 years, we give him the benefit of the doubt and say the fact that he doesn't have a purchase document is not evidence of the fact that he didn't buy it, but rather he now has to show us that he's been there long enough where he wasn't worrying about it anymore. And since he wasn't worrying about it, he doesn't have to produce a purchase document. Now, the truth is that, as the Rishonim point out over here, it's not good enough for the time to elapse. It's not simple elapsement of time that allows you to have this chazakah whereby after that time you can lose the shtar. Because if you bought the property and did nothing with it for 3 years, you can't establish a chazakah just because nobody's been there for 3 years. Or you haven't planted it for 3 years. It doesn't work that way. You have to utilize the land in order for it to establish a chazakah. The reason being either in order to trigger someone's questioning your ownership or they're appealing your ownership of the land has to be triggered by your utilization of it. They're not going to object to your using the land if you're not using the land. And therefore, you need to be utilizing the land in order to have these objections surface. That's one. Or your utilization of the land can replace the loss of evidence when your shtar disappears. The lack of a shtar in of itself is problematic because you lack the best piece of evidence that could show that you own the land. So then if we just had a situation in which you didn't have a shtar, we wouldn't believe you. So now we give you this alternative way to establish a chazaka that says that the loss of a shtar at this point in time is not a negative for you. It's no longer a negative chazaka or in your ownership. But you have to have established your ownership in some other manner. And it can't simply be the land is laying fallow. That's not an establishment of ownership. You have to establish the ownership through the utilization of the land by which that will then replace the documentation of the sale. So for those reasons, up to 3 years, you need to have the shtar. If you don't have the shtar, you cannot establish a chazakah. Beyond that point, you don't need the shtar anymore, and the chazakah can replace the shtar as evidence of the fact that you own this piece of land. So Amalei Abayi. Abayi even challenges this position of Rava, which is accepted, the halacha, El Mi'ata. Based on you, Mecha'a, Shelo Befanav, Lo Te'avi Mecha'a. An objection to his ownership of the land, when it's not in front of him, not face to face with the person utilizing the land, Damrile, because the person who's utilizing the land can say, Imachat Be'apai, had you objected face to face with me, have a mizdarna bishtarai. I would have been much more careful with my shtar. So what the irur or the objection does is puts the person, the purchaser, on notice. He now knows that somebody is questioning his ownership. Well, if someone's questioning his ownership, he better keep the shtar around in order to prove his ownership. So the mecha'a is a way to alert the individual that he better watch out and keep his shtar around. And so what Abayi says is, that should only be true if the individual comes face to face and tells him, I object. So now he knows to watch his shtar. But if the person goes to Edim and says, that land is really mine, and he's living in it illegally, when the person goes to Edim, the person living there has no idea that someone is questioning his ownership. Since he felt comfortable and didn't think anyone was questioning his ownership, after the 3-year term elapsed, he let the shtar go because he didn't think there was anybody questioning his ownership. And so Abayi says, you should have to demand objections be done face-to-face with the purchaser. Otherwise, how does the purchaser know to keep his shtar around? So Rava says back to him, which we saw in yesterday's daf, Damerlei, Chavroch, Chavra Yitle, your friend has a friend, V'chavra de Chavroch, Chavra Yitle, and your friend's friend has a friend, or in other words, there is a rumor mill or news spreads. Once you tell more than one person, especially in an issue like this, then those individuals will tell it to the next person, eventually information will get to the individual who purchased the land, and he'll know to hang on to his shtar. As the Tosfos notes over here, Abayi's question is really only a question if they're in the same city. It's not that Abayi doesn't fundamentally agree with Rova's position that rumors spread or the information spreads, but rather, if they are found in the same city, Abayi believes that the purchaser can say to the person questioning his ownership, you should have come face to face with me in order to object. Because we live locally, you live here, it was easy for you to come to me. The fact that you didn't come to me, I took that as an indication of the fact that you were mochel, or that you didn't worry about it. So now, even though the rumors came to me, I thought you were just trying to be maknit, I think you were just trying to bother me, or hurt me, or make things difficult for me, but I didn't think you really had a serious objection. Because if you had a serious objection, you would have come and spoken to me face to face. But that's only true where there was an option for the individual making the objection. On the other hand, if they're in different cities and the person making the objection has no way to go and speak to that purchaser in person, then we'll say, even Abayi will agree that chavra, chavra chidle, that rumors spread, and that if you get the information out there in the public domain, it will eventually reach the party that needs to know it. And as the Rabbeinu Yonah notes over here, even though it sounds like from this Gemara, the way that Rava is posing the answer that the rumor mill or information flows, and that's how we will allow, how we will know that the objection will reach the individual. What happens in a situation in which we know for sure he never got the information? Well then, can he establish a chazakah because there was no objection? If there's no objection, he didn't know to hold on to his shtar. So the Rabbeinu Yonah says, even if the information never reaches him, it's still considered to be a mecha, it's still considered to be an objection, because the original owners have right to exercise, which is to say that the property in this person's hand never really left my possession, it really always belonged to me. And if you do that in the requisite statute of limitations, which is this 3-year period, even though it never reaches the purchaser's ears, nevertheless, your objection is already now accepted and recognized by the court, and therefore no one can establish a chazakah now because you've raised this objection. As Rabbeinu Yonah says, because of your objection, the property never left your hands to enter in the hands of this other individual for him to then establish a chazakah, and then you're going to have to bring proof, not just a chazakah, documented proof, or witnesses that show that there was a sale that took place, and that you are the true owner of the property. So Amar Rav Huna, Shlosh Shanim Shemru, the 3 years that are mentioned in the Mishnah, hushachlan mitzufot, that is that he ate them in consecutive years, meaning that it was all sequential, and there were no gaps in that time period. The Balei Tosafot already on yesterday's Amud Aleph discussed what was the chiddush of the Mishnah enumerating the total dates of 18 months and 14 months. The Ramban suggests that which the Tosafot rejected is the fact that they are mitzufot. Those years, or the time periods, have to be consecutive, and can't be time periods that are broken up with other time in between. Now, the Baalei Tosafot didn't love that answer because it said that's what Rav Huna is going to say later on. Rav Huna is going to give us that information. So why would the Mishnah be teaching us a Chiddush that Rav Huna is going to tell us? And that means that Rav Huna's statement no longer is relevant or a Chiddush because the Mishnah already told us this information. Though the Ramban says that that's exactly where Rav Huna got it from. The Mishnah had the information. He's Midayik from the language of the Mishnah. And that's what precipitated his position here in the Gemara. Now the Gemara wants to clarify this memra of Rav Huna. My Kamash Malon, what is Rav Huna teaching us? Tanina, Cheskat Shloshanim, Miyom Liyom. That when it comes to a Chazakah of 3 years, it has to be day to day. Meaning you need to have a Chazakah that establishes that you were there. So Gemara says, Mar Dutema Miyom Liyom. What is meant in the Mishnah when it says day to day, Lafuke Mekutaot? That comes to exclude a case of those that are cut off, the way that the Rashbam reads it, which means that they're not full years, similar to the Seifa. Don't say that the 3 years there is not literally 3 years, but rather it's a partial part of 1 year, a full second year, and then a partial of the third year. And similarly, the Rabbeinu Gershom says the same thing, Limute Mikutot Shlote Sofri Shana Tchilat Achrona Vemtzeit Shlema Ulolam Shlemot Beinan Vafilu Mifuzerot. You need full years, but they can be not in a sequential manner. It can be the first year, the third year, and the fifth year, as long as they are whole years. But rather you say that it has to be a continuous full 3 years. And that's what Rav Huna comes to add for us. Kamash Malan Rav Huna, that not only do they have to be full years, but they also have to be sequential years. They have to be done without any breaks in between. And that's what the Gemara says, Ma'udotem ayom niyom afuke mekutot, ulo olam. Even if they were dispersed over a period of time, Kamash Balan Rav Huna, that they have to be all in one period of time. Rav Chama says that Rav Huna will agree in an area that this is the practice of the area, that they leave the land fallow every other year, or every third year they leave the land fallow. And so doing so is not a break in establishment of the Chazakah, because nobody plants at that time. The establishment of the Chazakah is considered to be continuous, because in the times that people normally plant, you plant it. So even though it may take you more years to establish the Chazakah, nevertheless, those years in between will not be considered to be breaks or problems in your attempt to establish a Chazakah. That's what the Rashbam says over here, because Da'akzik Beikin Maksa Inche. He took possession of the land the way that normal people utilize this land in this area. Umiu Shanasho Vira Inola Lecheshbon Shloshne Chazakah. But he does give a qualifier and say the 3 year time for Chazakah can only be established within the years where you are planting. So even though the year where you leave it fallow does not interrupt your establishment of the Chazakah, it does not count towards your establishment of the Chazakah. Although you could see a position that might argue on the Rashbam and suggest that the 3 years include the fallow year, because that's the way that people use this type of field during that year. And you could even establish a Chazakah with the year that is fallow. Where it says, Pshita, what's the question? He's acting the way that people normally act in this situation. Why would you even think that this should not be considered the establishment of a Chazakah? It says, Lo, tzricha d'iga de movir v'iga de lo movir. Because in this city, there isn't a singular way to handle your fields. Some people leave the fields fallow. Other people do not leave the fields fallow. V'aygavra movra. And this individual is trying to establish a Chazakah and say that he purchased the property. Div leave it fallow. Ma'udetema, I would have thought, the original owner can say to the purchaser, if it was really your land, then you should have worked it all of these years, including the year where people leave it fallow, because there are other people in the city that plant it. Kamash Malon, the Kamash Malon from the statement of Rav Chama about Rav Huna is, if I'm the only field that's planting in a whole tract of fields that are not planting, it's going to be more expensive for me. We can't hire a single shomer to watch over all the fields. We don't have any more scale from doing things together, because everybody else is leaving them fallow. I am working my field. Vinami. And even if it is that the people in the fields are working around me, and I could get that economies of scale, I'd still rather leave it fallow, the avda tfei, because if I leave it fallow, it'll produce more in the following year. And therefore, I have a vested interest in seeing it remain fallow. And that's why I didn't work it. So you can't demand that I work the field if that's to my detriment. And that's why I left it fallow, even though there are different practices within this city. Tanan, our Mishnah, Chezkat Batim, you can establish a Chazakah with a house. Va'abatim, debiyomama yadeh, b'leil yalo yadeh. If you want to establish a Chazakah about a house, the normal utilization period of the house is day and night. So in order to establish a chazakah, then you would have to have testimony to the fact that the person stayed there day and night. So the Gemara says, with regards to him living there during the day, the neighbors see him, people see him, so of course we can get testimony about that. Belalia, at nighttime, nobody has any idea whether he lived there or not. Samar Baye, man masid abatim. Who are the people that come to testify about who is the resident of this house, who occupies this house? Shivive, the neighbors. Shivive midayade biyomoma of Belalia. Neighbors know both during the day and the night whether there's someone there. I mean that they see people going in and out. They know when people go in and out. They know when there's noise there. They'll be able to testify the fact that he was there not only during the day, but also at night. Even though maybe they didn't see it with their eyes, they have enough circumstantial evidence by which they can establish the fact that he was there at night. And again, what we're trying to avoid in all these cases, that Rav Huna says that the time period must be a continuous sequential amount of time that you're establishing the chazakah, is what we don't want as an individual establishing chazakah by utilizing the land when the owner is not around, or at times that people won't notice. So what we don't want is people going into land, taking it, and then disappearing every time the owner shows up, or leaving for a year and then coming back and using it again, figuring that, well, they left for a year, the person's not going to worry about it. So what we don't want are people establishing chazakot by simply playing a game of disappearing. And so therefore we want testimony to the fact that the person was there on a continuous basis. Therefore, it would be obvious to the owner, if there was another owner, that he would have to object to their being there. And so we had that back by the fields, that we want the fields' years to be sequential, continuous years. We don't want interruptions. Elim Kane, it's a normal interruption where people normally would leave it fallow. But if he's leaving it fallow in order, in a sense, to trick the owner into thinking he's not really there, but then establish a chazakah, we're not going to let that happen. And the same with the house. If the balim of the house only come home at night, this person uses it during the day and disappears at night, the balim will never have any knowledge of the fact that he's there during the day in order to object. So we want him to be there all the time so that we know, first of all, he's using it all the time and establishing a chazakah, establish the fact that he really is the owner of the property, but also not just owning the property in a way that avoids the consternation of the true owner of the property. Rav Amar, going to Atu Beitre, Vamre, Rav says, no, there's another way to get evidence of that. If two people come along, Vamre, Anan Agrina Mine, we rented it from him, Vidarina Beit Plachnin Biyoma Valelia. And we lived in it for 3 years straight, morning and night, renting it from this individual. So now we have Edim testifying to the fact that they physically lived there for that 3 year period. And they paid rent to the quote unquote purchaser of the property, the new owner of the property. And that should be evidence of the fact that he owns it or it's his property. Otherwise, the owners should have objected if someone was there for 3 years nonstop in the day and the night. So we thought the possibility that Chezekat HaBatim would undermine this position of Rav Huna that you need continuous, sequential establishment of a chazakah, because we could only bring by houses evidence of them living there during the day, but not at night. By the Sadeh, that would suffice because people only use the field during the day. So he used it when people used it. But a house that's used both during the day and the night, you'd have to establish that he's using it in both time periods. And how do we get evidence of that? Abaye answered and said, yes, the neighbors will know both the day and night. Rava offers an alternative answer, which is that he rented it out to someone who was there day and night. And therefore, we know for sure they can testify to the fact that they lived there day and night on his behalf to establish the chazakah. Amalei Rav Yemar, the Ravashi. Rav Yemar says to Ravashi about Rava's suggestion, Hani nogim be'edutan hein. These people are partial in the case. They are not an impartial party coming along and testifying to us that he was there for 3 years. They have partiality here. The Elo Amre Hochi, because if they don't say that, Aminanu Zilu Habule Agar Beita Lahai. We're going to tell them to go pay the money, the rental, to the individual who really owned the property. So they want the owner of the property to be the person who rented it to them, because they've been paying money to that individual in order to rent it. And now if you all of a sudden say it wasn't his, it belonged to the original owner, they're going to now have to make compensation or pay rent to that individual. Now, the truth is they could get their rent back from the person who was not the true owner of the field, but obviously that entails trying to extract money from someone who may not have that money, or people don't want to end up in court trying to extract money from an individual. So they'd rather have it be the person they paid be the owner. That way they have discharged their obligation vis-a-vis the rent. Amalei. Dainei de shvile hachi dainin. He says that only very poor judges would adjudicate a case like this in that manner, which means that he's answering him and saying that if they've already paid the rent, you are right, they are nogea be'idutan, and we can't use them as evidence. Milo askinan kigon de nikite agar beito. It's a case where they still have yet to pay the rent. They're holding the rental payment in their hand, and va'amre the man leitve, and they're asking us who should they pay it to. So now they testify now to the fact that they were there for the last 3 years with the intent of paying rent to so and so. That should be able to establish a chazaka. They're not no gabe tutan. They have no vested interest in seeing it be this individual be the landlord versus the other individual being the landlord. They're willing to pay rent to either party. And therefore, they're not no gabe tutan because they testified that he really owns it because they lived there for these 3 years. That won't change the fact that they have to pay rent. And they're going to pay rent to one of two individuals. And therefore, their edut is not considered to be a biased edut. Amar Mar Zutra, Vita'in, if he makes a claim, or asks for a claim to be dealt with, Vamar, and he says, Leitu Tresade Lasude Lei, he says, bring along two edim to testify the fact, the Darbe Bayit, Tlatshine Biyomu Balelia, that you lived in his house day and night for 3 years, Tanate Tana. His claim, or his request for information, or for evidence, is a good request. As the Rashbam notes over here, this is milta b'anpe nafshohi. This is a completely independent part of the Gemara. It's not connected to what we said before. And what he's saying is, it's pshitile to Mar Zutra, that even though all of these Amoraim above require that you have 3 years, and 3 years that are consecutive and continuous, afilo achi, even though that is the case, they don't require that you bring a deem to evidence that fact. If you bring a deem that say that you lived there for many years or for 3 years during the daytime, we would accept that testimony. On the other hand, if there is someone who is questioning that or appealing that decision, then he has a right to ask for more evidence to show or demonstrate that you were there both during the day and the night. So what we're saying is it's not the default threshold of evidence. You could just bring evidence that you were there during the days, and we would accept that as a chazakah, unless there's something to the contrary. And that something to the contrary would be a claimant coming and saying that you really don't own the land here, and I want you to prove to me that you were there during the day and the night. At that point, we will ask him for that higher threshold of evidence, and he has a right to make that request. And the Rashbam qualifies that by saying, "Dekevan detayin tanat bari." The claimant here makes a definitive claim. "Dekamar ani ritiv shelo dar belelot." I saw that he didn't live there at night. "Lakach lo michati." That's why I didn't reject or object to his staying there, because he didn't stay at night. He wasn't establishing a chazaka. So now you have to bring a counter claim to that, or counter proof to that. The fact that you were there at nights, not like he's saying that you weren't there at nights. Although there are others that believe that you don't need a definitive claim in order to exercise this right. Your simple request for information is sufficient to demand that he now bring evidence to the fact that he was there both the day and the night. The Balei Tosafot will bring from the Rebbe Mordechai over here that he says, according to Rashi's explanation of the Gemara, which we don't have, but is seemingly very similar to that of the Rashbam's, which is the right here is of the original owner to question the authenticity of the chazaka and ask or demand that he show evidence of being there during the day or the night. How come if he doesn't make that request, we don't make that request on his behalf? Because if we're going to end up giving the property to the wrong person, why wouldn't we ask the same question that the original owner has a right to ask? So he answers that, mistama, the general or default way that people act is if they're there during the day, they're probably also likely there at night. So what Beit Din says is if we have evidence of the fact that these individuals can testify to the fact that he was there every day for 3 years, then we're going to assume that the nights in between he didn't disappear, that he was there. And that's why we'll believe him. If someone then comes and brings contrary evidence or starts to question whether he was really there all the time, then we will demand that you explicitly tell us that you were there day and night, not simply implicitly that you were there because you were there every day. We assume that you were there every night. But then he brings an alternate version of the Gemara, which is Rabbeinu Chananel Perish de Mar Zutra Kai Apircha de Rav Yemar. The Mar Zutra is not an independent statement, but rather a continuation of the previous discussion, the question that Rav Yemar posed to Rav Ashi. And then we had this issue with the Sochrim, who are testifying, and they suggest to the Gemara that they're no ge'abe dutan, that they are biased in their testimony because of who they want to pay. And not that this is a claim or a right of the individual to ask for such evidence. So some suggest that Mar Zutra is arguing on Rav Ashi's premise that if the edim have the money in hand, have yet to pay the schirut, the rental income, that they are not considered to be no ge'abe davar, they're not considered to be biased in this issue. Nevertheless, the questioner, the original owner, who's the claimant over here, can say, I don't believe these individuals, even though they have yet to pay the rent. I don't believe that these individuals will tell the truth or that they're not biased in any way. And he has a right to discard those edim because they do have some connection to the case, even though it may not be as clear as a case where they've already paid the rent. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Hananel suggests that an answer to the question as to why it's not a case of Nogea Beidutan, and that is because, as the Rabbeinu Hananel explains over here, there were two sets of Eidim. There were renters that were there for the three-year period of time, and now we have new renters that are there. Marzucha is pointing out that even in a situation in which they already paid the rent, still they would not be Nogea Beidutan, because the situation or circumstances where these Eidim or Sochrim already have left the place, and they no longer owe any money because they say we paid the rent that was due. So now they say we lived there for that duration of 3 years, and we've already paid the rent. So now what are you going to say? The claimant, the original owner, is going to say that rent belonged to me, come and pay it to me. He has no claim. He had no idea they were living there to ask them for rent. So he can't make a claim like that or a definitive claim demanding the rent because he had no idea that they were renting. The only reason he knew they were renting there is because they testified that they were renting there. And therefore, Pesha Asur, Pesha Itir, they're the ones who tell us they lived there. They're also the ones who told us that we paid the rent to the purchaser. And therefore, they can establish a chazaka that way, and they're not considered to be Nogea Beidutan. Because even if technically the court found that it belonged to the original owner, he may not have a claim for this rent because he had no idea they were living there. And the only reason we know they were living there is because they told us. If they told us they already paid, then we believe that they've paid, irrespective of who is determined to be the owner. And then the next line in the Gemara is, Amodi Marzucha Beruchlin. Marzucha agrees with these iterant perfume or spice sellers, Amachzirim Ba'ayirot. They go around from city to city. Da'afagav Delotan, Tainin and Le, Anon. Even though he didn't make the claim, we make the claim on his behalf. So depending on how you explain the previous Gemara in Marzucha, will have impact on how you explain Marzucha over here. According to Rashi, the Rashbam, who say before that this is a right of the claimant to go among and say, I know that you weren't there at night. You must prove to me that you were there for day and night. We don't go in and make that claim on his behalf, but if he makes it, we will support it. By the case of Rochlin, he doesn't have the ability to make that claim. He disappeared from town. He's not here. That's part of his job. He's not going to have the ability to make such a claim because he's just not around to be able to counter the testimony that the person was there both during the day and the night. Therefore, we will act on his behalf to be Toain, since he's not around, to be Toain and say, maybe it wasn't the case. Maybe you only have testimony for the day and you were leaving at night. So we will do it on his behalf. That's the way that Rashi and the Rishbam would explain it. As according to the Rabbeinu Hananel, who thinks that the previous statement of Marzucha was addressing the case of Rav Yemar and Rav Ashi about the question of Nogea Beidutan, and in the end we say that we don't consider him to be Nogea Beiduto, that we have a scenario where the renters can be not be Nogea Beidutan, what does it have to do with being Toain and making a claim over here? And therefore, according to the Rabbeinu Hananel, and the Baal Tosafot will point this out, the Gemara over here does not read Mode Marzucha, but rather Mode Rova. That Rova agrees. And this is going back that Rova, who said before that we can rely on these renters, Rova is Mode, that if the renters are these iterant spice or perfume sellers, that they can testify that we were there anytime we were in town. They don't have to say that we were there every day and every night, because they weren't there every day and every night. They traveled out of town. But as long as they say, as long as we were in town, we used the house day and night, that'll be enough of a testimony considered to be a continuous 3 years of a chazaka that is established, even though they're not there from day to day. And you can see that in the Rashbam, where he says that the Moder Marzucha over here, l'shita to of the Rashbam, means that you have to, after he makes a claim, and demands that you bring evidence to the fact that you were there day or night. He'll have to bring evidence that he was there for 3 years straight, not leaving for a single night, in order to establish his chazaka. And we will be toein on behalf of this rochel that the person bring evidence to that fact. The Rashbam is very interesting because he says that the Gemara is so literal that you have to be there every single night during that first 3 year period in order to establish a chazaka. It would seem to me, and there are others on the Mishnah that say something similar, which is when we say miyom yom, mean day to day, it doesn't mean literally every single day, every single moment. It just means that you're there in general during the days and the nights, and you only left at times that were normal for people to go on vacation or short durations, but not necessarily like the Rashbam says here, that you're here every single night. But that's the way the Rashbam reads the Gemara over here, that this Moder Marzucha is going on the previous statement of Marzucha, which is independent of the issue of Rav Yemar and Rav Ashi beforehand. The other hand, the Rabbeinu Hananel, who thinks that Marzutra is arguing on Rav Ashi, or he's adding on to the answer that Rav Ashi gave, then Moda over here would have to be a Moda Rava, and that's what the Rashbam says, V'lo Garsina and Moda Rava. And the Girsa of Moda Rava here is incorrect. That Girsa is necessary for the Rabbeinu Hananel and Yad Ramah's explanation of the Gemara over here. But for the Rashbam and Rashi, who explained it as being totally independent, they can have Modeh Marzutra. And his proof is the fact that Rava himself has no position that he's taking. Rava is only answering on behalf of Rav Huna, who said before that you need to have this consecutive time. And then we questioned that from Cheskat HaBatim, and Rava came up with an answer that renters could testify to that fact. But that doesn't mean that Rava is establishing a position or staking out a position. He's simply defending the position of Rav Huna. And therefore, if you're going to say Modeh over here, and you think it references to Rava's statement about the rental, then you should say Moda Rav Huna, because Rava is just a representative answer to the position that is established by Rav Huna. So if you were going to change the gears from Moda Marzutra, it should read not Moda Rava, but rather Moda Rav Huna, that Baruch Le Makzir Beir, that these iterant salesmen that go around, that you can establish a chazoka even though they're not there all the time. Because that's really referencing back to Rav Huna, who requires that you be there on a continuous basis. And for that reason, he rejects this reading of the Rabbeinu Hananel, that it's Marzutra was connected to the previous statement, and now here it's Moda Rav instead of Moda Marzutra, because he says, first of all, it should be Moda Rav Huna, and second of all, he says that the old statement of Marzutra is independent of that which happened before, and the Moda Marzutra is referencing his own statement that you have a right of the claimant to come in and demand more evidence. And then here it says that not only can he make that claim, but Beitim will make the claim on behalf of someone who doesn't have that capacity to do it because they're not always around. Moda Rav Huna, and Rav Huna agrees, Bechanuta de Mechuza, and when you're speaking about a storefront in Mechuza, De La Yomama Avida, La Lelia Lo Avida, that is made to be used during the day and not at night. Given the fact that these properties are used during the day and not at night, then you can establish a chazaka similar to a sadeh by simply being there during the daytime. You don't have to establish a chazaka by being there both during the day and the night, because people don't normally utilize these properties at night. Tosva brings two opinions as to what the meaning of that is. The first one is, afgadah v'lo v'shloshu tzufot, even though it's not a continuous 3 years, ele mefuzarot, because it's only during the daytime, kevin dar chayu ba'ochi, since that's a normal way to utilize it. It can be similar to a case of the fields where they leave one field fallow over a certain period of time, or a case of fields where they only use them during the day. And therefore you can establish a chazaka through 3 years of daytime usage. Now, Tosfot then goes on to say, why isn't this very simple? If by the sadeh and by the case where you laid it fallow, we count those as being sequential or continuous time, why would this case be any different? Yesh lamar. He says, because these storefronts, the fish bnei adam, she'enem chanvanim, darim behen ben beyom ben belayla. Seems to be that these properties are zoned both for residential and commercial use. Similar to something that we saw earlier in the Masechta, that sometimes in the residential neighborhoods, they set up small shops or small stores. And so over here, it has dual usage, both residential and small commercial. If it was used for residential, it would need to have a chazaka of day and night. If it's used for commercial, small commercial, you'd only need it during the day. So the Havamina would have been that just like by a person who uses it for residential use, you need day and night, so too the Chenvanin, these storekeepers, should have to have that same requirement of day and night. The answer to the Gemara is no. Rav Huna agrees in that case. Since they're only used during the day, you establish the Chazaka during the day. But then the Baal Tosfot go on to say, according to that opinion, you need 3 years of days, which is only half of the 24-hour period that you need to be there. And therefore, it would require 6 years to establish a chazaka, since you're only there for half the time. In order to get to a full 3 years, you actually need 6 years. Similar to what we said before with the fields that you laid fallow, that over there, you can't establish a chazaka, elim can you work the fields in the non-fallow years, 3 years of non-fallow. And so to over here, the same thing, you need to use it 3 years of days, which is the equivalent of 3 years of full 24-hour days, which is the equivalent of 6 years of just daytime. And that's what the Rav Huna is saying over here, that he agrees in that case that you can establish a chazaka by only using it during the day, but it will require 6 years to do so. And even though earlier on we said with items that only use during a certain period of time, like the olive presses, over there we don't suggest that you have to use them for 3 years equivalent of when they are used, that's because that's when everybody uses them. That's the normal period of time when everybody uses them. And the properties that we're speaking about here, there are people who are using them day and night. And therefore, in order for you to establish a chazakah by simply using them during the day, you will have to match what these other people do, which is day and night. If that's how they would establish a chazakah for 3 years, you need to establish the equivalent chazakah over 3 years, which will take you 6 years to do so. Rami bar Chama, v'Rav Ukva bar Chama, zamun hayamta b'hadei adodi. They purchased this maidservant in a partnership. Marish tamish ba rishona, shlishit v'chamishit. One of them used it the first, this third, and the fifth, we'll assume now years. Marish tamish ba shnia revi'it v'shishit. And the other brother used it in the second, fourth, and sixth. So they used her alternating years because they had brought her in partnership. Nafak ir'ur, nafak ar'ar ilava. All of a sudden, some objection came out questioning their ownership of this maidservant. Atu the kamei de Rava, so they came before Rava to help them out with the case. I'm like, oh, my time of idutu, hochi. Why did you guys use the maidservant in alternating years or alternating periods of time? Okay, in order that neither of you can establish a chazakah against the other party. Neither of you had her for 3 years sequentially, that you would switch back and forth, so neither party could ever establish a 3 year total period of time in which they had possession of the woman and claimed that she was his. Just like between you two, you can't establish a chazakah against the other party. The same day where it's successful at preventing one of the two partners from taking possession through chazakah, so too, it prevents your ability to establish a chazakah vis-a-vis third parties. Now the Baal Tosafot over here asks, don't we have a general principle in the Mishnah coming up on Daf Mem Bet that the Shutafim in Lehem Chazakah, that partners cannot establish a Chazakah one on the other. Valzeh Perish Rashi. Again, you can see that they had a version of Rashi that they were looking at. That they had to do this over here because they didn't have any witnesses to the fact that they'd established this partnership. Had they had witnesses to the partnership, then in Ochanami, neither of them would be able to establish a Chazakah against the other. Problem is, they had no witnesses or documentation of the partnership. Therefore, in order to maintain the partnership without either partner having rights that then undermine the rights of the other party, they made sure that neither partner could keep the maidservant for a duration of 3 years to establish a chazakah. Although the Ri asks a question about that position and says the person who took her in the first year could claim her all to himself. And then the other shutaf that comes along and says it was mine, what evidence does he have aside from the fact that it would belong to one of the brothers? So the Ri therefore says that he thinks the reason over here that this partnership could establish a chazak and they needed to do this is a near the Ri, not because that prevented one of them making a chazakah, but it was a way for the shutfut to be engraved, self-understood, that there was a partnership here because they never let the maidservant be too long with one of the two parties. And therefore no party could ever establish a chazakah or undermine the shutafut in any way. And just the same way that you did that to prevent each other from having a claim, the same way you prevent yourselves from having claims against third parties. V'lo amrano d'lo katuv itra. This whole statement is only true if they don't have an itra. The way that the Rashbam explains an itra is shtar chaluka. It is a documentation of the partnership or the division of property. And as the Rashbam explains, yesh mefreshim kala itle. It is something that becomes public very quickly. And if there was a original owner who thinks that they don't have rights to this maidservant, he should have stood up right away and objected. Velo micha. Since he didn't do that, immediately there is a chazakah. So what the Rashbam brings from these yesh mefreshim is that the itra is such a public event that of course the original owner, if he thought it was still his, should have spoken up because everybody knew about the fact that this maidservant was now being purchased and used in a partnership between these two parties. And the fact that he didn't object automatically makes it that the chazakah is established because it's so blatant and so public. If the person doesn't make an objection at that point in time, he loses his right to make an objection after that. And you can see that view that the Rashbam is quoting in the Rabbeinu Gershom, which is Aval Kadvu Shtar Chaluka. Even though they didn't have her for 3 years straight, because this type of contract or document has tremendous publicity to it, and right away he should have objected, since he did not object, it becomes a chazakah immediately. The Rashbam says about that view, says, I don't think that's the right way to read the Gemara. You still need 3 years to establish a chazaka. It's just that the publicity makes it a situation in which the person for sure knew about it. It stopped the individual from establishing a chazaka. Even though the two brothers, or the way that they had structured their partnership, would not allow either one of them to establish a chazaka, nevertheless, together as a unit, the fact that there was this publicity surrounding the purchase of this maidservant, it would behoove the owner, if he thinks there wasn't, to speak up, because it's very clear that something's going on where they're exercising ownership over this maidservant. If he thinks that they're doing it incorrectly, then he needed to speak up in order to indicate to us that the 3 years cannot establish a chazaka. But the Rashbam nevertheless believes over there that the chazaka still requires 3 years. Amarava, va'achla kula chutz mi beit rova. If a person eats or utilizes the field except for a section, a beit rova kav in it, kana kula chutz mi beit rova kav, then he's koneh this with the exception of that tract of property that he did not plant. So in the context of the Gemara, Rova's statement seems to be speaking about a case of a chazaka, and you're trying to establish the 3 year chazaka. If he used all the property with the exception of one part of the property, he establishes a chazaka on the areas that he utilized. The areas that he laid fallow, he will not establish a chazaka on those pieces of the property. It doesn't get pulled along or brought along with the remainder of the property. And we will bifurcate the din with regards to this property and say part of it has a chazaka, the other part does not. There are those that want to suggest that this is not only true in the case of a chezkat raya, a chazaka that's establishing raya, is replacing the need or necessity for a contract, but even with a chazaka that is used as a kinyan. We use a chazaka as a kinyan by utilizing the property, then if you only utilize a portion of the property, the remainder of the property that you don't utilize or establish the chazaka to make the kinyan on will not be purchased. Whereas most believe that the fact that you made a kinyan on this portion of this property and the total property was clearly delineated, as long as you've used a portion of it, that brings along the remainder of the property. And therefore, by kinyan, this chazaka would work. What we're talking about here is the chazaka to replace the shtar as a raya. Over there, the lack of utilization of that portion will leave it out of the possibility of getting that chazaka of 3 years. Amar Avuna Brei de Rav Yeshua, v'lo amran ela debar zriyahi. That's only true if the area that he let lay fallow was plantable or fertile land. Avalav bar zriyahi, if it's not plantable or fertile land, kani lo agav ara. Then he gets it with the remainder of the land, because what else was he supposed to do with it? Matkif la Rav Bibi bar Abaye. Rav Bibi bar Abaye says, wait a minute, elamiato, tsunama, bedrock, or areas of land that are not fertile or plantable, ba meikne. How do you make a kinyan? We know that there are kinyanim on karkar, kesef, shtar, and chazaka. So how do you establish a chazaka? If you're telling me the means of making a chazaka over here for a kinyan is planting the land, then in areas that are not plantable or not fertile, how do you establish a chazaka? The way that you establish ownership is by bringing your animals to graze over there or to live over there, or spreading out your fruits to dry over there. That's how you establish ownership. So too over here, in order to establish his ownership, he should have utilized it the way that people utilize land that is not fertile and not plantable. They bring their animals there. They put out things to dry on it. They have ways to utilize the land that will establish their ownership. And so too over here, even if he can't plant that section of land, he should be able to establish a chazaka through the remainder of the land. Elaim Cain, he did something with the land that's not fertile that establishes his rights of ownership over here. Ho damar le lechavre, someone who says to his friend, ma bayit b'hai beita, what are you doing in this house? Amalek, he responds to me, Nach Zavinte, I bought it from you, Vachalit Shnei Chazaka, and I've been living here for the last 3 years. What's the question? Amalek, Ana Bishkune Gavai Havai. I was, the way that the Rashman reads this, I was living in the internal house. I was living in a house that was internal to this, and I basically lent you or gave you the right to live on the outer part, but every day I would walk from my house through your house, and that means that your Chazaka doesn't exist, because I lent it to you. And I didn't have to object because of the fact that I walked through the property every day demonstrating my ownership over the property. And as the Baal Tosfot point out over here, it must be a situation in which the person has multiple points of egress from his house. And instead of choosing one of the others, he intentionally walked out of his house through the part that he had lent to this other party in order to demonstrate the fact that the other person didn't own the property or could not establish a chazaka. On the other hand, many other Rishonim believe that the statement of Ana B'shkune Gavai Havai is that I was in some far-flung place. I was not around when this was going on. And therefore, I could not object to his living here because I had no idea that he was living in my property because I wasn't present when all this went down. Or I was not around when you claim you purchased the property from me. I was in this far-flung place. You never came there. You have no evidence of meeting me at that time. So how could you have bought it from me at that time if I wasn't present? Ato lekamei de Rav Nachman. They brought the case before Rav Nachman. Amalei, zil barur achilatech. Goes, go clarify your consumption. Or in essence, prove your chazaka, according to the Rashbam and the Balei Tosafot. Prove the fact that you've been there for 3 years. Bring evidence of the fact that you lived in this house for 3 years without anybody else passing through, without anyone else being there. And if you can establish that fact, then the property will be yours. But if you can't establish that fact, that won't be the case. According to those that suggest that he lived in a far-flung place, bring evidence of the fact that you actually met each other during that period of time and that you could have purchased it from him. Or give evidence of the fact that the information had reached this individual. And even though he's in a far-flung place, he should have objected and he didn't. But your burden of proof is on the individual trying to establish the chazoka. To that, Amalei Rova, Rova, the Talmid Muvok of Rav Nachman, says back to him, Hachidino? That's the right way to adjudicate this case? The person who's trying to move the ownership should be the one who has to bring evidence. And over here, the person who's mukzak in the property is the person that's living in it right now. The one who has the problem was trying to reestablish ownership over here is the original owner. He's the one who's trying to now take it back into his possession. If that's the case, the burden of proof should be on him, not on the individual who's already established a chazaka. Because the other party, in some senses, agrees to that fact, either because, in all these cases, no matter how you explain the Gemara before, everyone agreed that the individual lived there for 3 years. That is not in doubt. The question is whether that 3 years has meaning. But the fact is that he is the one who's mukzakin the property now, and the one who's being me'arer, who's questioning that or objecting to that, is the original owner. And as the Rashbam points out over here, there must be a deem to the fact that he was the previous owner of the property. Because if there were no deem that he was the previous owner of the property, then case wouldn't even get off the ground, and even Rav Nachman would agree that the burden of proof would be on the individual who's trying to extract or change the ownership over here. But in a case where I have a deem that was previously owned by this individual, and now we have an individual claiming he lived there for 3 years, and the original owner says, either according to the Rashbam and the Balei Tosafot, I was walking through your property every day, or according to the Ramban, I was too far away to hear about this in order to object, or according to the Rabbeinu Hananel, the Yad Ramah, I was never around for you to sell it to me. Rav Nachman says in that case, the burden of proof is on the individuals trying to establish the chazaka. Whereas Rovo believes that the burden of proof should be on the original owner because the person who's there has established a chazaka that nobody disagrees with. It's a question of whether the chazaka is a valid chazaka, but he's still the one who's now in the property and the person trying to take it away from him is the original owner and the burden of proof should be on him. All right, we're going to stop here. 2 lines from the bottom of Chaf Tet Amud Bet, and we're going to continue with the Gemara tomorrow, which is going to bring another case of Rav Nachman and Rovo, which seems to contradict their positions in the case that we just finished.